listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. What a weekend. Wow. So much stuff. I found a couple interesting things by accident, and brought me to wanting to discuss this later on. Come check out Culture Fest. The Vietnamese Student Association is putting on a show with singing, dancing, and martial arts presentations, and much more on Saturday, Mom's Weekend, April 14th, 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. There will be free drinks and food for purchase. This is a zero-waste event, and 50% of the profits will go to charity. This will take place on Flag Lane by the Bonfire Pit, I guess. Admission is free. For more information, email vsa_wsu06@yahoo.com. The WSU International Student, or the International Center, is a student-driven organization seeking energetic and creative cougars with appreciation for culture as future interns for the fall semester. The International Center is a fun outlet where students can gain cross-culture experience by working with other international students. Class credits may be earned through your internship. Applications are due April 13th and are available at the International Center in Smith Gym, Room 214, or online at www.ip.wsu.edu. The High School Equivalency Program at WSU welcomes volunteers to participate as tutors for adult GED students. Fluent Spanish speakers are especially needed. This is a wonderful opportunity for you to acquire teaching experience. Contact Priscilla Haystay at 335-5652 or go to Cleveland Halls, rooms 23 through 21 for more information. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to contact KZUU at 335-2208 or email gm@kzuu.org. KZUU is pleased to announce the formation of the Barbershop Harmony Society chapter in Pullman, Moscow area. They are seeking men of all ages who enjoy singing. They meet every Monday at 7 p.m. in the Greatman Health Building on East Palouse River Drive in Moscow. For more information, contact Ross at 406-570-8576. Had a bad weekend? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WSU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you are in need of help, stop by their office in Ad Annex Room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and Fridays 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Avery Microcomputer Lab in Avery Hall shows free movies every Friday at 5 p.m. Movies include Outfox, Talladega Nights, Brother, The Goonies, The Rocky Horror Picture Show, Children of Men, and more. For a full listing or more information, contact the AML website at www.aml.wsu.edu. Join KZUU at our open-to-close event at The Goog. All day starting at 12 p.m. till 2 a.m. on Sunday, April 29th, KZUU will be hanging out, giving stuff away, and joining a live broadcast. Bring your friends, because it's going to be a doozy. Volunteers wanted. The Women's Transit is looking for drivers and dispatch volunteers. All volunteers receive hands-on training. Cars, gas, and insurance will be provided. Receive academic credit while giving back to the community. To sign up, come by the Women's Resource Center at Wilson Hall, Room 8, or call 335-6849. Want to go to the Sasquatch Music Festival? KZUU wants to send you. Call the KZUU Sasquatch plea line. If you can convince us that you deserve to go, we'll send you and a friend to both days of the Sasquatch Music Festival happening Memorial Weekend, May 26th and 27th at the Gorge. For more information, visit KZUU.org or call our Sasquatch line at 509-590-2207. Once again, 509-590-2207. The KZUU stream is now running. Listen to your favorite show anywhere on planet Earth as long as you have a connection to the internet. Just visit www.kzuu.org. Click on the Listen Online links and we'll take care of the rest. KZUU DJs, Republic Service announcements like what you heard every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in Smith Gym Room 126B or fill out the form online located under the staff button and email it to PSA@KZUU.org. For more information, call our office 335-2208. If you want to reach me in the studio, that's 335-2207. On the web, www.kzuu.org, and on our other show's website, www.thepes.com. In the meantime, we are waiting for the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heath. Once again, the Reverend, favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heath. Wow. I'll tell you what, this last week has been a pretty darn busy time. I've been working with the training people. It's been a been really busy. I put in a ton of hours preparing the PowerPoint presentations, making sure that I have everything just right, preparing all the information that I need in order to be able to teach well and get the information that I'm trying to get across to everybody. It's been, like I said, I've put in a large number of hours, a lot more than... it's interesting, I guess, if you've ever been a teacher or have prepared for teaching classes, you find that you put in many more hours of planning and putting the class together than you ever do teaching that class. You know, that might be part of the reason why sometimes teachers tend to, once they get a lesson plan written and set up just the way they like it, they tend to more or less use the same lesson plan year after year. They might update some of the information, and well, the good ones will go through and update the information and whatnot, but realistically, reinventing the wheel every single year on situations where that information really doesn't need to be updated, the number of hours spent is incredible. Anyway, so I spent, like I said, many, many hours. As a matter of fact, on one day I spent 10 hours between preparing the multimedia and preparing the PowerPoint presentations, going through all the data and getting some practice in of going through it all. So I'd sound like I knew what I was doing and it would, you know, flow real nicely. So I do it because I like to do it. And... but the problem is that it is a lot of work, and with my schedule as it is, I've actually had to put some other things on hold in order to make it happen. But I really do love teaching. That's why I was at one time an education major up until the time I realized that I wasn't planning on being a lifelong teacher. I didn't want to be a high school teacher. I'm not really into that kind of thing. That's more of a captive audience that's forced to be there. I'd rather be teaching an audience that wants to be there. It's a lot easier. So those who are teaching a captive audience of people who don't necessarily want to be there, that's a lot of hard work. And that takes a lot more dedication than I ever want to put into a job like that. I like teaching. I like teaching to people who like to learn. I like teaching to people who, you know, are out there to better themselves, and they realize that the education they're going to get is going to better them, and I hope that I can do my small part in helping them become better at whatever job it is that we're teaching them to do. One of the things that that was frustrating to me with the education department, and actually we've talked about this on the PES in the past, was the very, very, very left, politically leaning people within the department that make it really difficult for people who are conservative to more or less express our views. It's one of those things where they go out of their way to make sure that we are taught that we need to be open in the classroom, that we need to be willing to listen to other people's point of view, and that everybody's point of view needs to be welcome in the classroom. But the minute I open my mouth, all of a sudden I'm not welcome. It's not cool for me to speak up. And so it is interesting that they teach us one thing, but as long as the point of view is something that is conservative in nature, it's not allowed, because that in of itself could be non-inclusive. So it's okay to not include things that might be non-inclusive to be inclusive of everybody, if that makes any sense. I'm sure it doesn't, and that's the whole problem with some of the left-leaning people in the education department. That doesn't make sense. You have this issue where you cannot you cannot say what you believe without having people who have the power over you to, in some sort of way, question you, hold you back, make it harder on you. We had Ed Swan in here who had those deposition or those, I can't think of the word now. Anyway, there's these reports that they had filled out, and there were so many things on that report that were so based on more or less the professor's attitudes towards the student that had nothing to do with how well the student could or couldn't teach. And one particular person had things, Ed Swan had things put on his report that were based on the fact that he wore a hunting cap to class. And because of that, he was a very bad person. It was very clear by the fact he wore a hunting cap to class. And it was really interesting because I've seen so many things that people wear to school. I don't know how many of them would get marked down because it was something they wore. I was in a situation where I was being questioned because my political beliefs were not in line with those of the education department. And I actually had a meeting with I don't know who exactly it was at the education department. It was somebody who was higher up, who had her own huge office and had some power over me to more or less let me know that, I need to become more sensitive to other people. Otherwise, I might not be in the education department for, my graduation. So I was, I just felt like the education department wanted me to set students up to fail. And when I say that, I'm saying we more or less were taught to allow students to get away with mediocrity. And as long as they tried, that's really all that mattered. And I've always been of the vein that there's a point at which, if somebody's not doing a good job, they're trying really hard and you work with them, they're willing to come and get the extra instruction and they want to keep practicing until they get it done. And if it takes them some extra time, and I'm willing to put in the time to do it. But then you have the other situation where they sort of tried, but they're not willing to do anything to help themselves out. But as long as they're trying, that's all that really matters. I mean, it's the kind of thing where, for instance, I did this once years ago. And you might try this yourself someday. Just don't tell them where you heard it from. I had some assignments, some papers to do in class. And I did not get those papers completed within the prescribed period of time. And according to the syllabus put out by the professor, students who did not have their papers turned in by the time that they were due, they would be considered late. And after so much time of being late, they would be an F, period. Too bad, too sad. Well, I knew this. I knew this going in. There was no surprise to me. I was in class every single day. It wasn't like I didn't know, but I still didn't get the paper done. I chose, yes, I'm taking responsibility for my own actions. I chose to not get it done on time. Why? Well, I don't know. I probably had something better going on. Maybe I was busy watching TV. Who knows? I honestly don't even remember why it was so late. Maybe it was just because I had to do some research and I had to do some reading, and I really hated reading, especially the materials that I had to do for that class. Well, we're getting to the end of the semester. I mean, the school is just about out. As a matter of fact, it's finals week by this time. There was no final in this particular class, and I had actually had a marathon 24-hour of writing paper because I had actually late papers and other classes. I was a slacker. I'll admit it. I was slacking big time. But I was willing to accept the grades that I earned because I earned them. Unfortunately, they weren't good grades, possibly. So I have this big monster session. I realized the other class, they were actually going to accept the late papers. They were just going to grade you down accordingly. So I get all my papers written, and I get my final paper written for this one particular class where I knew it was going to be an F. But I said to myself, I said, if I turn this paper in and I actually see the professor face to face when I turn it in, I bet that professor is not going to follow through with what the syllabus said. So I go up to her office, and I'm really hoping she's there. And by the off chance, she was. I was going to slip it under the door. She wasn't there, and whatever happened, happened. But I realized that if I saw her face to face and I handed it to her, I knew I would not fail that class. I just knew it. So sure enough, I go to her door, and it's open. And I look at her, hey, how you doing? She's like, I'm doing okay. And I hand her the paper. And she sort of looks at it, gives almost snarls in a little bit of a way, just sort of recoils in horror, like I'm handing her a paper that's 2 months late. She goes, what's this for? I said, it's my paper. She goes, it's 2 months late. You already got an F on it. Why are you giving it to me now? I said, I'd rather get an F having turned in my paper than not having turned it in at all. Boom! She marked me down for being late, but I got a C on the paper. I passed the class. And that, you know, was that the right thing to do? I mean, I guess it's her discretion. Would she have done that for other students? Who knows? I was there every day. I sat up front. She knew me by name. And that was maybe one thing that I had as an advantage over my other students in the class. I was willing to do that. I was willing to sit at the front of the classroom or right near the front. I was willing to have a dialogue with the professor. The professor knew me by name. It wasn't a big, huge lecture class of, you know, 500 or 1,000 people. It was one of the smaller classes, maybe 50 students. But once again, I was there every single day. I did not skip class. That's one thing I tended not to do. I had my periods where I would, but for the most part, I did not skip class. I would be there every day. I'd be right at the very front of the classroom. And obviously, that helps. Everybody says it's good to do that, and it does. It really helped. That is the reason why I did not fail that class, because I would have gotten an F on that paper. There was no final. That was one of the major grades in the class. Maybe I wouldn't have failed. I might have got a C-, which is pretty horrible for the particular class it was. So, but the moral of the story is that's what they're sort of teaching here in the university and in high schools and everywhere else is you can slack. You can be mediocre at best. And you're still going to pass, and you're going to get out there with whatever. I would argue that maybe a lot of it is you get out of it what you put into it. And when you're putting in thousands of dollars a year, maybe you ought to be putting a little bit more of your time in order to get good grades. And it's not about getting good grades. It's not about that at all. Really, what it's about is your education. I could care less if, you know, you learn everything you need to learn and you know it inside and out, and the best you can do on a test is get B minuses. That really doesn't matter in the long term, in the grand scheme of things. What matters is what you've learned, what you can apply to the rest of your life. And that's the whole point of this. It's not about getting a 4.0. You can get a 4.0 and not know a darn thing and go out there in the workforce and not even really be... That 4.0 is not going to come back up. What are you going to do when you're 30 years old? Oh, I got a 4.0 when I was in college. Oh, yeah, what do you got to show for it? Well, nothing really. It was a bogus major, and I never really studied. It was just so easy to get good grades, you know? Who cares? Take your time and learn what you're learning. That's what you're here for. Grades are great. It gives you an idea of how you're doing compared to some arbitrary scale. It gives you an idea of how well you're able to test for that person. But really, when it's all said and done, your education is what you make of it. And you're only going to get so much of it in the classroom. You've got to spend so many more hours outside of the classroom preparing for it. Just as a professor or the teacher spends his time putting together a lesson plan, putting together all the information, researching questions and answers, being as prepared as possible for any kind of question that might come up, you as a student also need to do the same kind of thing. You as a student need to be outside of the classroom studying the information that was presented in class, studying the information in the book, maybe even talking to the professor or peers if you don't understand certain things, making sure the homework is done correctly and done on time, spending a couple hours for every hour within the class, outside of class, doing the study, and so you're ready for this kind of stuff. Because really, they don't tell you to spend, say, 3 hours studying for every 1 hour in class because they want to take away all your free time. They tell you that because then you learn the information that's being given to you, and you become a smart person. And that's why you're paying thousands of dollars every year, because you're trying to become a smart person. The smart person then will someday get a good job. Unless, of course, they're a liberal arts major, and then they become a professor someday else at some other university. And the cycle starts all over again. So anyway, here I am, College of Education. And I had professors, no joke. I mean, I honestly, by the time I left the College of Education, it was probably good that I left. I had lost all interest in doing my work and doing a good job. I really don't remember if it was just that I was so busy with so many other things in my life. At that time, I didn't have seven jobs. At that time, I didn't even have one job. All I had was school. And I still could not manage to do well at school. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was just that I was at the point where I didn't care anymore. I wasn't going to classes. I wasn't doing as well as I had hoped I was doing, which I wasn't doing well because I wasn't studying. Well, how about that? I wasn't taking the time outside of class to get things done. So I was at a point in my life where I realized I wasn't going to be a teacher. I really, though I wanted to have the degree in case someday I ever needed to fall back on it, I never planned on being a high school teacher, though I had at one time had. Well, before I got to college. So I realized, what do I need to do? I need to totally get out of this concept of being a teacher. I need to get out of this major. This major is it's killing me. It's not something I'm enjoying. I enjoyed portions of it. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed some of those classes. I spent what they call a practicum time. I spent some practicum time at Pullman High School. I worked with teacher at that time named Mr. Harder. I was a biology education major with a minor in chemistry. That's the magic word. So I was a chemistry and biology major within the College of Education. And so when I was at Pullman High School, I was teaching biology. And as it turned out, ironically enough, it was the section in the biology book that I had was actually called Biology or Chemistry for Biology. And essentially what it was is it focused on chemistry concepts that related to biology. For instance, mainly talking about certain atoms and molecules that are specifically related to life and living, such as, say, oxygen, carbon, water. I mean, just your basic stuff like that. And it was a really neat experience for me to get in there and get a chance to teach the students. At the time, it was really interesting for me because I was only a couple years older than them, and it was really strange for me to be back in a high school just a couple years out of high school with people who weren't that much, I mean, people that I could still relate with really well, but they weren't that much older than me. And what was interesting is I was in the class for like a month or two, something like that. Maybe it wasn't that long, it only seemed that long. And I sat in the class. Mr. Harder was one of those guys that he allowed the student teachers to get in there and take control of the class and do a lot of work. Other teachers, from what I found out, were a lot more controlling of their classroom. And pretty much you were a glorified TA for the whole entire time you're there. So you didn't really get any teaching time at all. You just sort of sat there and watched the other guy teach. Me, I actually, after Mr. Harder was right in the middle of a lesson unit. And when that was done, he allowed me to take the whole entire unit for the chemistry. I wrote all the materials. I wrote all the tests. I wrote everything. And I had a chance to test out some of my ideas, which included the idea of every day. Sort of, you can't have attendance-based points in high school. At least you weren't able to there. Like you here at WSU, if you the professor sometimes will take attendance, and you could lose points if you're not there. And they tend to like to do that the Friday before, say, Memorial Weekend. Well, anyway, I couldn't do that, but I found a way of making attendance a way of rewarding good attendance. And the way I did that was the following day I would have two or three really relatively softball quiz questions, so to speak. I lobbed you some questions that more or less touched on the major points of the previous day's lecture, which covered what was in the book. So theoretically, if somebody wasn't at lecture and they read the book and they kept on top of it, they could do well on this quiz that I'd give every day. And so really it wasn't affecting their grade either, because if they did their work, they would get good grades or get good scores on these little quizzes. So it wasn't, I wasn't really punishing anybody, but it made it easier on those who came to class, because the next day they would be able to easily answer these quiz questions. So like I said, I usually ask 2 to 3 questions, and they get a certain amount of points, usually 2 or 3 points, depending on how many questions there were. And then they would hand that piece of paper in, I'd correct it, and so on. Well, when I was sitting there in class, and that was one little experiment I wanted to try, because I thought it'd be sort of a neat idea, and I thought it actually worked out pretty well. Then when it was all said and done, we just put that in as sort of a overall quiz and weighted that score so it didn't blow away an actual huge test. So while I was sitting there, though, the classroom had 6 groups of tables, and each table had about 4 to 5 people sitting at it. And as I sat there, I realized that there was one particular table with 4 particular people who were very, very noisy the whole time, and they just liked to talk and chatter. So I used this program that Mr. Harder had that was a seating chart. And I took those 4 people and I put them in the farthest seats away from one another in the room, and then I just randomly assigned everybody else. And I watched for people who actually worked well together and weren't disruptive, and I made sure they were still next to each other, because I didn't want to take that away from them. But more or less, it was just to get these 4 people apart. And I put it off by saying, well, he has this program that randomly assigned seats. And I told them where they sit, and that was their place to sit for the rest of the semester, or the rest of the time I was there teaching. But it was really interesting, because as I was in there teaching, they started calling me by, Mr. Anderson. And I was like, I'm not used to this. This is sort of weird. I'm not used to people 5 years younger than me calling me Mr. Anderson. It was sort of, the first few days it was really weird. After that, I got used to it, and it was sort of like, okay, the standard. But it was a really neat experience for me, and I can see how teachers are, they don't want students to fail. They want students to pass. They want students to do well. But what it seems like sometimes is they get blind to the idea that passing students just to say they passed doesn't help them in the long run. And no matter how badly I wanted students to pass, I wasn't in the mindset that they should pass if they didn't do well. So it's really interesting when you get into the classroom, because really a student passing or a student failing in a lot of ways is directly related to your teaching, because you're the one who's giving them the information and should be helping to monitor their progress along the way. But there's only so much you can do when you have 100 kids a day come through your classroom, or maybe 150 kids every single day come through your classroom. How can you necessarily keep up with all 150 kids when you have so many other issues going on? You're worrying about lesson plans, and if you're in a smaller school, you're teaching 4 or 5 different subjects every single day. Then again, you might not have as many students, but still, there's so many things that teachers have to juggle that it makes it really difficult for them to be able to keep up with the students. So maybe by being more lenient in their grading, they allow students to pass, and passing students shows the teacher's teaching well. The problem, though, is that at the end of the 12 years of schooling, we're finding students who are having very hard times getting along in college. There's so many students who are coming in that are barely passing or not passing math and English placements that they're having to go into the 100, like English 100, math 101, just to get up to college level, so then they could go into a normal English 101 and a math 107 or something. So it's a very interesting time of of our education process, and that's where the WASL comes in. Well, that as well as the No Child Left Behind, and a lot of administrators, teachers point at that as being a devil of a program that the federal government is mandating all these mandating certain levels of knowledge and learning to get these grants from the federal government for education, which will help them out. So school districts, especially around Washington, are scrambling in order to be able to have their students pass the WASL, which is what the Washington Assessment of Student Learning. And there's a lot of people who are both sides of the issue. Some people think it's a good test. Other people think it's a horrible test. We've talked about it on the show before. Some of the questions on those tests can be pretty ambiguous. Even with Tom Forbes one day when he was on the show, we were talking about it, and I had him doing some of these questions, and I did them myself. And, you know, maybe it's because we're older and we think about things a little bit more critically than maybe a fourth grader would have. But it was really interesting for us to read some of these questions and answer them and get them wrong because, you know, we're thinking like adults and maybe not thinking like kids, or maybe not enough information was given. I don't know what the situation was, but the schools now, in order for them to get the federal government grants, they need to be able to do well in the WASL. The WASL is now being taught to. It's almost like rather than teaching students to learn and students learning stuff and teaching them how to take what they've learned and apply it to real life situations, they now teach students to the test. They teach students to pass the WASL. So great. If life was the WASL, they're going to be fine. But no. This is real life. This is where we have to be able to take knowledge, take a whole bunch of pieces of data. And in our head, we should be able to assemble these pieces of data in some sort of way and apply it to different concepts. We need to be able to maybe take one concept, tear it down to the foundation of that concept, and be able to relate it to another area and build it back up. And the problem is that it really seems like we're teaching to a WASL. We're teaching to a test, and we're not teaching to teach and testing to see how well they are able to apply it, to how well they've learned certain things. There's some subjects like history where it's just a matter of learning facts, learning dates, learning information. But there's other subjects like sciences and maths where you learn a concept and you got to understand this concept in order to be able to solve problems. And it would be nice if students were able to have these kinds of abilities. Even while I was in high school, one of the guys a couple years younger than me, I think he was a freshman when I was graduating, had said one time, one thing he hates about school is they don't teach you to learn. And I was like, what? That's what we're doing here. We're learning. He's like, no. They don't teach you how to learn. And it was sort of a weird concept for me, especially at the time, of what do you mean they don't teach you to learn? That's what you're doing every single day in every single class. You're silly. You freshmen, go get me some juice. Well, anyway, I started to realize what he meant. It's not that they don't teach you information. They don't teach you how to learn information on your own. They don't teach you how to... It's a concept I can grasp in my mind, but in some ways I can't put it into words, which might mean I don't really totally understand it. But the point is that he thinks, even back when I was in high school, that there was this inability for teachers to teach students how to learn. It was more just teaching some facts. And even when I was in high school, grade inflation was a major problem. It still, in my view, is a problem in high schools and in colleges. One of my philosophy professors, Dan Holbrook, and I actually saw him just the other day. And he had remembered one of the discussions that we had had. Actually, we'd had the discussion more than once, but he'd remembered it. And we said hi to each other when we saw each other, and he actually brought it back up. And he said, you know, I think you're right about that. You know, and what my argument was is grade inflation. That professors are giving, what an A used to mean and what it means today I don't believe are the same thing. I don't think that somebody has to do a really bang-up job to get an A anymore. I think they can do a mediocre job and get an A. I think that an average attempt at doing something is going to get you a B when it really should be a C. A C is an average person. A C is the average. That's what the majority of the people should have. That's where the area where everybody more or less will straggle around. And then those who go a little bit above average might be getting a B, and those who go extremely above average should be getting the A's. And then the other way down. I mean, if you're below what the average person has been doing, you need to get a D. And if you just are horribly below, you need to get an F. But it really seems to me that we've chunked down the grading scale that a B minus a B might be the average. And if you do okay well, you might get a B plus A minus. And if you do really well, you'll get the A. But if you do extremely well, you'll also get an A. So what's that mean if the guy who does extremely well and the guy who does really well are getting the exact same grade? But it just seems to me that professors want to... The professors are doing one of any number of things, and maybe they're not doing this on purpose. It very well could be just that's the way the society has been going for so many years that that's just the way it is. That the expectations, the way tests are written, the information that's given, sets people up to be able to easily get good grades, where you don't have to maybe work for them as hard. There's been classes that I've gotten A's in that were just, you hear about people talking about it. It was a joke of a class. It was so simple. And it's like, should college classes really be like that? Should any class at WSU, should somebody say, oh my God, that is cake. I didn't even go to class and I still got an A. What does that say about the class? What's that say about the learning? You got 3 credits of an A on your transcript, and you really didn't learn anything. And, you know, of course we brag about it. Oh yeah, it was so easy, I got an A, I didn't even have to do nothing. And really look at it from a longer range, and you're like, yeah, you just spent some money and time on a class that you got nothing out of. Wow, you should be mad, really. Would you be happy if you spent your money on something else? You're expecting to, say, get a really, really nice watch, and you spend a lot of money on it, and when you get it, it's really a cheap knockoff, and it's horrible, and it doesn't really keep track of time. Would you brag about that? Oh, yeah. I went and spent my money on something that was going to be high class, and I really got a low class knockoff. Ha ha, that was so cool. Yeah. I didn't even have to do nothing to get it that way either. They just sent it to me. It was so easy. No, you're not going to brag about it. So why are you going to brag about getting a low grade education? You're spending a ton of money and you're bragging, oh yeah, I got this really low grade education. I didn't have to do nothing in order to get an A. Wow. Well, why don't you just buy a diploma from a diploma mill? If that's what your goal is, to get A's, ooh, big whoop. Go buy a diploma from a diploma mill. Save all this money. Save these seats for other students who actually want to go to college and who actually want to learn. So anyway, you have this WASL, the standardized learning. Schools are actually cutting out some of these traditional subjects in order to focus more time and energy and teacher resources on teaching students to pass the WASL. Is that a problem? I would say it is. I think the schools are overreacting to a situation, and rather than doing the right reaction, which in my view would be just making sure you teach students to understand the concepts, to understand how to do math, to understand how to read, and how to critically think about things. If they focused on that, they shouldn't have to worry about students passing this WASL. And you could keep these other subjects in schools that have traditionally been there and have not been a problem. But this also goes back to one other point that I make quite often, is the fact that the federal government has way too much control over the states. It wasn't supposed to be that way, but it is. The federal government has tons of control over what the states do, and they have this control because they hold the purse strings. They hold the money. if a state wants money, they got to do what the federal government says. And in the case of the No Child Left Behind Act, in order for the states to get money that the federal government takes from the state's citizens, the state has to jump through all these hoops. The state of Washington has chosen, well, the WASA will, you know, prove that we're following the No Child Left Behind Act and we're going to be able to get all this money back from the government that took it from us to begin with. So once again, my argument is that the federal government's role and scope has gone so far beyond what it needs to be, and it controls so much of what the states do, that this is what kinds of things we're running into. We do what we have to get the money, and we don't care about what the long-term effects are. If the state of Washington did not have to jump through hoops to get the money that they should have from their funding, maybe, just maybe, we would have schools teaching students to learn, teaching students the concepts, and we wouldn't have to worry about teaching the WASL, teaching to the WASL, having great programs eliminated from schools in order to make sure that there's enough teachers to teach the students how to take the WASL. One such teacher who was being affected by this is one in my old high school, Mr. Tewitt. He taught, and he has taught, a class for 20-some-odd years called Survival Science. Survival Science is an elective science class. He was also a teacher of conceptual physics and engineering physics. So he knows his science. He's a very intelligent teacher. And what he did with his classes were... What he did with his classes with survival science is you pretty much spent the whole entire semester learning about surviving in different environments. Well, what did that entail? Well, that entailed a lot of things. It wasn't just simple lecture. There was a lot of science involved in it, hence the survival science. It taught you life sciences, earth sciences, some chemistry and biology. I mean, it just taught you. It pretty much brought all the sciences together. And the cool thing about it is it brought it to the point where the average student could see its use. It applied these sciences. It's a really great class. And it, like I said, it's been around for 20-some-odd years. Students have been in this class. And there's always a waiting list for students to get into the class. It's a very popular class. But the school district, and this is the Issaquah School District, the school district is looking at eliminating this class, eliminating his position, because they're worried about having enough teachers to teach students to pass the WASL. And it's a crying shame that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students over the years who have been taught this class, they look back on it 10, 15 years later, and they remember the information they learned in that class. They remember the six survival priorities. They remember sheltercraft and firecraft. And they remember how to survive in situations. They understand how to survive in situations. They actually get the opportunity to go out and practice their survival skills with an overnight outing where you have no food and you have to scavenge for shelter and on and on and on. It's a really great class, and unfortunately, the powers that be are more worried about teaching students to a test than they are about teaching students. Unfortunately, this might put one of my favorite high school teachers on the chopping block. Ever since I got out of high school, nearly every year, I've helped out with the survival science overnight outing. I've always been one of the chaperones that will go up there and assist in making sure the students stay safe, checking up on them continuously. Even though they're out there on their own in their shelters, we still are always checking on them, making sure that they're safe, making sure there's no medical issues, and on and on and on. So it's not like they're going to get hurt or anything, which really in today's day and age, I'm really surprised we're even able to have such a survival outing with the society that we have that is so full and ready to do lawsuits. Anyway, that's my little rant on the idea of education, great inflation, the federal government having so much control that they're causing the states to jump through these hoops that realistically, if people were to listen to me, the federal government wouldn't have that kind of money and they wouldn't have that kind of control to exert over the states. And we could do things our own way locally versus having to listen to people a couple thousand miles away in another state or in another city named Washington, D.C. In the meantime, this is Monday, but you're going to get a double shot of the favorite of the PES, the Reverend, Reverend Horton Heat. Listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Reach us on the telephone at 335-2207, on the web at www.kzuu.org, and at our website, www.thepes.com. Calling all fine art appreciators. Gallery 3 in WSU's Fine Art Building is hosting new exhibits every week for Bachelor's of Fine Arts degree candidates. Stop by Monday through Friday and experience our local talent. Join KZUU at our Open to Close It event at the Coug all day starting at 12 p.m. till 12 a.m. on Sunday, April 29th. KZUU will be hanging out, giving stuff away, and doing a live broadcast. Bring your friends, because it's going to be a doozy. Want to go to the Sasquatch Music Festival? KZUU wants to send you. Call the KZUU Sasquatch Plea Line if you can convince you that we deserve to go. Actually, if you can convince us that you deserve to go, we'll send you and a friend to both days at the Sasquatch Music Festival happening Memorial Weekend, May 26th and 27th at the Gorge. For more information, call 509-590-2207. That's 509-590-2207. Or visit our website, www.kzuu.org. Wow. So much other information in the news, so much other things going on in the news. You had that huge, well, you had that murder that we talked about a little bit last week, getting all the more crazy throughout the last week. Quite the shakeup at WSU PD. Don't know how much I actually want to talk about that one, though. We had another fatal car accident on Whitman County Road last night. And a little bit more. Stay tuned. Has made it in the news nationally with the most recent escapade where a landlord saw heating lamps and a green leafy vegetable substance growing in somebody's closet. Calls the police. Police get a search warrant going there. Find out the guy was growing tomatoes. Cool. So anyway, that news has been actually making its rounds the other day on one of the Seattle newspapers' website. It was the most emailed story. And this morning on the ABC radio news, they had a blurb about it as well. So it's definitely made its way around. Sort of embarrassing, but, well, you know, it's not like the cops knew going into it. It just makes for a funny story after the fact. And you never want to be the cop who got caught like that. So, unfortunately, in a much different news, quite a bit less lighthearted was what happened at WSU PD over the last, well, it's been happening for a while, but what's come of it? Here's my thing is I think WSU was looking for a reason to replace the chief. I think they were just looking for any reason. Technically, I believe he's an at-will position where they could just can him if they wanted. I might be wrong about that, but that was my understanding. The biggest thing is I don't think that for whatever reason they weren't happy and they were looking for a reason. And here's why I say they were looking for a reason. Because what they finally decided was his crime for deserving a demotion and a $20,000 pay cut would be equivalent to jaywalking. In this case, he quote unquote misused his computer, his information technology resources. How did he misuse it, you might ask? Oh, let me tell you. He received emails from people that were not work related and actually in some cases forwarded them on or showed them to other officers. So that's right. Non-work related email on his work account is offense that is a big enough offense that it's going to warrant you getting demoted and losing money. And like I said, that's about equivalent to jaywalking. The reason why I say that is because jaywalking you're not supposed to do. A lot of people do it, doesn't make it right, but it happens. Are people going to get thrown in jail for it? I think not. Most of the time, are they even going to get slapped on the wrist for it? No, they're not going to get slapped on the wrist. But someday, if somebody in authority wants to deal with you, they can use that as a reason. So then here you have a situation where you have this unauthorized using of work-related stuff for outside pursuits. And it doesn't matter what the content of the email is, doesn't matter what you're using it for. If it's not for pursuing your scholarly or work-related duties, you're not using it correctly, and that's a violation of policy, period. And my question would be to anybody on WSU's campus, have you ever sent out a personal email, something to somebody that wasn't work-related? Have you ever checked personal email? Have you ever got on eBay while you were at work? If you've done any of those things, you've broken the policy. And for that, you should get demoted. So if you're the head of your department, you should get demoted down to just a normal lackey. And if you're one of the normal lackeys, the worst I guess get demoted down to being fired. You know, maybe lose $20,000 off your pay because you did that. That's the equivalent of what happened up there. So, like I said, I think they were looking for a reason. And unfortunately, with being a chief of police somewhere, it's more about politics than it ever is about law enforcement. It's more about kissing the right boots and making sure that you get everybody happy. And unfortunately, you need to be a politician to be a chief. You need to be a politician to be the sheriff. Sure, you might enforce laws. You might go out there and do stuff. But for the most part, you need to be the politician. You need to be the guy that kisses everybody's boots. You need to be the guy that makes everything all right. And you need to be that guy. And if you are not that guy, people will try to get you out of there. Unfortunately, when you have two groups of people who in some ways want opposite things, no matter what you do, one of those two groups is not going to be happy with you. And unfortunately, once in a while, you might do something that makes neither group happy with you, and that's when you might get in trouble. What is it that you say, well, why is it that WSU really wanted to get rid of him, that they were willing to use such a lame argument that he misused computer resources that he should be gone over? Really? Think about all the students who might have misused their computer resources that they have at WSU. Have they been kicked out of school? Have they been demoted to being a part-time student? I think not. We have this rule that is not uniformly enforced. We have this rule that is not enforced hardly at all. But then all of a sudden they pull it out, dust it off, and thrash somebody with it. And that's why I attribute it to something like jaywalking. it's really, truly, for the most part, a very minor offense. You might argue there's times when a jaywalker might cause problems, and you know, then you know you have to have that rule on the book to do something about it. And yeah, you can also argue the same thing about somebody using the computer at work for personal stuff. There comes a point when maybe spending 4 hours of your day checking eBay and doing personal emails is a little bit excessive. But sending a couple emails in the course of your work, what about having a cell phone and getting a cell phone call in the middle of the day? You're taking away work time. What about using the telephone system at work to call somebody? You're taking away work time. It's one of those things where I just think that, like I said, they were looking for a reason to get rid of them. What's interesting, this is going to be, I'm really curious about this, and unfortunately, I really don't know what the answer is going to be, but you saw the Evergreen had a letter from the president of the police guild, more or less saying, you know, we represent the police guild, and we don't represent them, and we didn't do anything wrong. We're having some problems. I think the police guild was one of the groups that was not overly happy with the chief, and that tends to happen, that people aren't, that you're not always happy with what your supervisor does. You know, how many people can say that everything their boss does makes them happy? Very few. Very few. So you have the subordinates who aren't very happy with their chief. I don't know why. I'm not privy to that kind of information. But they're not happy with them. That's the bottom line. This letter to the editor, or this letter that appeared in the newspaper, was pretty clear about that. And what was also pretty clear is that the president of the guild made it very clear that the officers and the administration, being the chief and assistant chief, are not part of the guild and are not represented by the guild, and the guild doesn't really stand behind them. What's interesting now is, now that the chief has been demoted, and the thing is that the internal investigation actually suggested that he should get demoted to lieutenant, and he has accepted those and has taken responsibility for his actions, which I should be applauding him for doing such a thing, because I harp on the show week after week, look in the mirror, take responsibility for your actions. He realizes, realistically, he broke the rules. I believe that his punishment does not fit his crime. I believe that I can speak out saying I don't think his punishment is fitting his crime. Either that, we're going to need to fire half the university today. I would be really interested to know, through public disclosure, get a hold of, say, all the administrators in the French Ad building, take a look at their email usage, and find out if any one of them has ever used it for such a thing. And if they have, are we going to make them, like, say, let's say, just randomly, one of the vice presidents at WSU has inappropriately used email and used it for personal purposes. Should they get demoted? Well, if you're following the same, if you're treating everybody equally, which is very important, yes, they should get demoted. Will it happen? Would it happen? I doubt it. But the point is that I believe that almost everybody at this university has, at one time, broken the university's rule on information technology. Intentionally or unintentionally, it has happened. And I think it's wrong that one particular person gets singled out so heavily to the point where he more or less loses his job and gets pushed way back. So there's definitely politics involved in this, and they found a reason to demote him, and that's what they were looking for. He's taken responsibility for his actions. He's taken responsibility for looking at said items. And as the report even said, it wasn't that he was actively searching the stuff out. It came to him in email, and he forwarded it off. How many people have done that? So anyway, it is interesting, everything going on, and of course, you know, it's what I've been surprised about is there hasn't really been any letters to the editor one way or the other about what's going on. And I would argue that the minute one person writes a letter to the editor supporting the demotion, I would have them look at themselves in the mirror and say, have you done anything as small as he has? And if you have, and you are advocating that his demotion is just, then don't you think that a demotion for you from where you're currently at to something else would be just because you've done the exact same kind of rule-breaking that he has? I honestly think that if everybody looked at the policy on information technology at WSU, you will see that you have at some time broken the policy. And therefore, I think you should do the right thing and fire yourself. Turn yourself in. Go to the internal and fair investigation. Get demoted. Lose about $20,000 off your salary. Maybe get fired. Maybe you could just quit in lieu of being fired and save everybody the time. Because after all, you're one of those evil, bad people that have broken the rules and sent out some personal emails using the university equipment. And you need to be punished heavily for such a thing, such as the chief did. So, once again, where it's going to be interesting is you have this situation where you have the guild that's not very happy with the chief. Obviously, the WSU administration is not very happy with the chief. Chief becomes a fall guy, and he all of a sudden becomes a lieutenant at the police department. Now, here's the question. The lieutenants, the sergeants, and all the rank-and-file officers are all part of the police guild. He is going to become part of the organization that wanted to topple him. How is that going to work? I mean, I don't know about most people. I try to be a very good person. I try to not hold grudges. As a matter of fact, I had a neat little lecture that I listened to a while back on holding on to grudges. And, you know, I've taken that to heart. But I think it would be really hard as somebody who more or less was toppled by your subordinates than to all of a sudden become their peer, you know? It'll be interesting to see what happens, because realistically, he's going to join the organization that spoke out against him. That would just be sort of a weird notion. Anyway, I guess what the bottom line for me is that I supported the chief. I still support the chief. I don't know what it is that some of the subordinates within the department did not like about him. Whatever the issues are, they were never really made public or anything, so I can't speak to them. I just know from personal experience that I've had bosses that I haven't liked everything they've done. But that doesn't mean that they're necessarily a horrible boss and they must get fired. Anyway, I support the chief. I still support the chief. I am disappointed to see that he's getting busted for something that is a really minor offense in the grand scheme of offenses that could be committed. I am happy to see that he did step up and said, hey, I'm taking responsibility for my action. I did break the rules, and I'm going to accept what they are dealing out. Maybe he's at the point, too, where he's done. He's sick of being the chief. Who knows? Maybe he wants to become a rank-and-file officer again where you don't have to deal with all the politics. It might be sort of a nice change of pace. Be able to come to work, get your job done. At the end of your 8-hour day, go home and leave everything at the door and just be able to spend time with the family and do the same thing the next day rather than having to worry about this issue and that issue and this issue and that issue. I mean, it might be really nice, relaxing for him for a while. Anyway, to the chief, Steve Hansen, I really really hope the best for you. And I hope that that over the next couple weeks that WSU's police come together and, you know, embrace everything that's happened and embrace the you know, welcome Hansen as part of their family and keep him part of their family. Now, that all said, there's one thing that I was thinking about. And I believe this is going to be the case. Actually, the Daily Evergreen had a letter about this or an editorial about this already. And they are, it sounds like more or less they're advocating that the university should go outside of the university to find the right person to fill this position for chief of police. And I had already said that right after I had read what had happened. My belief is, and I'm going to say it right now on the air before anything even happens, I guarantee two things are going to happen. Well, one is a for sure. Well, okay. Here's what I believe is going to happen. number one, they are going to go outside of the university. We're going to probably find somebody, not from a small department, but from a relatively big department, maybe a number three or number four honcho, somebody who's been pretty high up in the department, wants some more upward mobility, wants to become a chief somewhere, but isn't going to do it at their current department anytime soon. So we're going to get somebody from a larger department who's going to come in, who's going to become chief. And the other part that I believe is WSU is going to go out of their way to find a minority. They're going to go out of their way to find one. And the reason why I say that is because they're going to try to show through their hiring that they are aware of diversity issues, and that by hiring a minority, not necessarily the best person for the job, which it could be, doesn't matter. My view, the one thing I have to appraise the Evergreen for when I was reading their editorial is they were pretty much saying, get the best man for the job. Get the one that's going to do the best job for us at WSU, fulfilling all these needs. They didn't go out of their way to talk about how we need to get somebody who's going to promote diversity and on and on and on, which I'm sure is what they were sort of hinting at. But the point is that I think WSU is going to hire a minority, whether it's a female, whether it's a black, or whether it's a or what. I just guarantee it's going to be a minority. I could be wrong, but I believe that they're going to go out of their way to do that. And I believe that they're going to do that because of some of the allegations that keep on getting floated by certain people in the community who try to claim that all the cops in this area are racist. And that they try to claim that the cops are taser happy, and they're, you know, they're willing to tase you for nothing at all. And, you know, all I was doing was, helping this old poor grandma across the street. I didn't do nothing wrong, and I got tased for no reason. And, you know, that happens all the time, of course. You know, cops tend to tase people for no reason. And but it's just one of those things. There are all these allegations, and how do you show that you're trying to fix it? Well, you go out of your way to go above and beyond getting the right man for the job, and you get somebody who looks like they fit the position. It's interesting. I was reading this article about the Seattle School Board and their infatuation with race. It's interesting that in a county named after Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., that race is such a huge issue, that race is huge to the point where they've forgotten the message of King. They've forgotten the message of judging somebody not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. To them, no, that doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, we have to know what color their skin is. That's important today. 40 years ago, that was what we were trying to get away from. Judge somebody for the content of their character. Now we're getting away from that. We're going to judge me by my race. But don't judge me. Accept me. In some ways, it doesn't even make sense. We have to recognize race. We have to be able to look at a person and say, oh, that's a black person, for us to fix things, I guess. To us to understand. The argument is we cannot be a colorblind society. The argument is that there's actually so many forms of racism now. And according to the Seattle, the person who's in charge of diversity at the Seattle School District, they've actually hired somebody who has like an office that deals with looking at the curriculum, looking at the school programs, on and on and on, looking for racism. And I've said this before. I said, if you look hard enough at something and you are looking for a very specific thing, you are going to find it. If you believe that somebody is out to get you, you're going to find reasons that that's true. Whether it's true or not, you're going to find reasons. You're going to rationalize things in your head, and you're going to explain them in such a way that fulfills your beliefs. So you hire somebody whose only job is to look and find racism. Guess what they're going to find? And they're going to find a lot of it, right? They're going to find it. So you have this situation where you have the Seattle School Board who has this office who has this website. And this website, no joke, has information about racism. First off, according to the website, only white people can be racist, period. This is something I've noticed about definitions of racism over the last, 10 years or so, that they've morphed it in such a way that racism can only be somebody who has power. And no matter how many people of different national origins, of different races, have positions of power, they're technically not in power. It's still whites who are in power. Therefore, only whites can be racist. And as such, anybody who is a minority that wants to say anything they want about white people, it's okay, because they can't be racist, per the definition. And then to go along with that definition, we add all sorts of other things. You add in institutional racism, cultural racism, individual racism, on and on and on. Then there's a couple other concepts that's going on in there. They gave examples of types of racism. Did you know that future time orientation is racist? If you're scratching your head, I'll give you a second to finish scratching it and trying to comprehend this concept that future time orientation, in other words, long-term goals, is a racist idea. That if you push that upon your students as a teacher, you are being racist. You want to know another one that's racist? Summer break. That's right. Summer break is racist. Believe it or not, summer break is a racist thing, because what it does is it puts black students behind white students. When black students are struggling and you put them on a summer break, they don't get ahead. And the person who wrote an editorial about this was like, well, wouldn't a white student struggling also be hurt by the summer? You know, what does it have to do with race? It has to do with students who are struggling or not struggling. So the idea that summer break is a racist concept is laughable. But it was this person who's in charge of the diversity at the Seattle School District believes these things. Now, some of these concepts were actually taken off the website because they were very controversial. But because they were taken down from the website doesn't mean that the person who said these and espouses and writes these views all of a sudden stopped thinking it. All they're doing is they're just not saying it anymore. But think about that. Future time orientation. If you think about and set long-term goals, you're racist. Do you think you're a racist? Well, according to them, you are. What else? Oh, summer break. Well, darn it anyway. Every school district that has summer break is institutionalizing racism. By golly gee willikers. What other things can we find that are racist? And how do you seriously explain future time orientation as being racist? It is just, it's asinine. So there's this new concept that it's not all that new. It's been around for a while, but you're seeing it more and more and more. And we're going to start seeing it even more. And it's going to become the next, if you remember, if you think about it, racism is getting dull insofar as the sharpness of the allegation. Yes, it's still a bad allegation to have made against you, but it's been made so often that it's like almost crying wolf. People don't come running to look anymore. It's almost like people are tuning out the calls of racism. Oh, that guy's racist. And nobody hears it anymore because it's been so overused and it's been so watered down of what racism really means, such as future time orientation. Oh, he used future time orientation, that big bad racist. Let's go stone him. We've watered down these meanings so badly that when you use the term racist against somebody, it doesn't quite have the same meaning anymore. So they have to come up with a new term, something that will cause people to jump again. Since being called racist won't do it anymore, what term can be used that will make even white people jump? That term now is white privilege. You hear it more and more and more. It's white privilege. Not only now is just the way you think and the way you act bad. Now just the fact that you have white skin is bad. It gives you white privilege. there's actually conferences. There's a conference in Colorado coming up on white privilege. It's a whole conference of people getting together to speak of white privilege. You can actually go to a website and download a sample video, and then you can turn around and buy it and use it to teach students about white privilege. And the first thing they say in the video is that this is not about making the white person out to be a bad person. This is not about an us versus them situation. And then they go in and they start talking about white privilege. And different people define it a little differently, but one of them more or less said it's an invisible knapsack that has no weight, that it gives you special invisible keys to invisible doors. And I mean, just on and on and on. I'm like, is this Harry Potter? Is this real life? So by the fact that you have white skin, there's nothing you can do about it. You have white privilege and you are holding other people back. That's the new thing now. Racism, being called racist, is so 1990. Now it's white privilege. Everything is white privilege. Everything is white privilege. We've gotten to the point where the idea of living in a colorblind society is all but dead. You can't judge somebody by the character of their person because you'll be looked at as not really being sincere. You can't do that. If I can't look at somebody and not see race, how can you? How can you be better than me and not be able to see race? You obviously see race because that's all I can see. All I do 24 hours a day, 7 days a week is be infatuated with race. And because that's all I think about and that's all I ever worry about, that's all I see. And therefore, everybody else must be the exact same way. And I understand where that point of view does come from. I do understand. Somebody who is in a minority group has a point of view that other people might not have. They see the world through the eyes that they have had for a long time. And as such, people who have these minority eyes and see the world in a certain way, that's sort of the only way they can see the world. And to them, that's sort of a normal point of view. And they can't really understand how somebody else sees the world. They can't really, to them, it's a daily thing. It's not that they're looking at it in a different way. That is their way of looking at the world. So unfortunately, there might not be anything that can be done about this idea of white privilege. There might not be. Some people aren't going to be able to become colorblind. They've lived their whole entire life feeling and looking at specific races, specific things. That's all they're going to be able to ever do. And maybe we'll never get to the dream of Martin Luther King Jr., which it would be a tragedy. Caller, you're on the air.
Scotty.
Hey, is this Batman?
It is Batman.
Hey, your theme song's playing. How about that?
Good. Perfect timing.
Funny how that works, huh? Seems like every week it's the same thing. So how are you doing?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Oh, ow. I just hit myself in the nose, so now I'm not doing too good.
Oh. Well, don't do that anymore.
All righty. That's good advice. Thank you. I shall follow it.
So what's been the topic of conversation today?
Well, I spent the first hour talking about the Wassail and, I started talking about grade inflation and how teachers are becoming less and less, they allow students to get away with more and more things. They don't, you know, I gave the story about how as one of my years in college, I wrote a paper that I turned in 2 months late, and after like 2 weeks, the paper was already an F. And I went, and I knew that if I went to the professor and I handed it to him in person, that they would not give me an F, even though their syllabus said so, even though that was the expectation in the class.
Yes.
And I went to the professor and I handed the professor the paper. And at first she sort of looks at me, looks at the paper, and is like, what's this for? I'm like, it's my paper. She goes, why you turned it in now? It's already an F. It's been an F for the last month. And I'm like, and of course I sold it as, well, I would rather get an F having turned in the paper than not having turned it in at all.
Yeah.
And no joke, I did not get an F. And so I've been arguing about grade inflation. I argue about that kind of stuff. You don't hold people to standards that you should be holding them to.
Yeah.
They allow... And so we've gone into this the College of Education sort of teaches people to be that kind of teacher. And then we get into the situation where the federal government holds so much money and so much power over the states have to jump when the federal government says how high. And I argue, well, we need to keep that money locally rather than giving it off to the federal government all the time.
Right.
And then we wouldn't have these problems. So the federal government says, okay, in order to get the money, you got to abide by all these things in the No Child Left Behind Act. Well, the state of Washington says, okay, well, in order to abide by this one part, we're going to create the standardized test to prove that the students are learning everything they need to know, and we call it the WASL. And now schools are freaking out because they're like, well, if we don't do well on the WASL, the state's not going to give us the money that's part of the federal government grant.
Right.
So now the schools, rather than teaching students concepts and teaching students, they're gearing the students to take the test.
Yeah.
And because of that, school districts are more worried about making sure they pass the test than teaching some of the extracurricular activities that have always been traditional in school. And you're seeing the loss of, say, music departments and other type of fluff activities in some of these schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about a teacher of mine back at Liberty High School in Issaquah, in the Issaquah School District, that might be losing his job. He's part of the retire, rehire. And he has this class called Survival Science, which he has taught for some 20, 25 some odd years.
Mm-hmm.
And this class is in jeopardy, even though there's a demand, such a big demand that he can't even fit every student that wants to be in the class in the class.
Right.
You know, there's like 200 plus students every year that apply for it, and only like 120 get into it. So you have this huge demand for this class. It actually teaches several different science disciplines and helps you apply said science disciplines.
Right.
But because they're more, because that's not something taught, or excuse me, because that's not on the WASL, they are going away from that. And there's a real concern that that class might not be offered this coming up school year.
Right.
So I talked about that for the first hour and sort of, you know, went off on about 1,000 tangents. And then this last hour, I started talking about what happened with Chief Steve Hansen at the WSU PD.
Yeah.
And how my argument was he's more or less being a scapegoat.
Yeah, that's exactly the same words that I came out of my mouth with regards to Chief Hansen just a few days ago. Was I use the exact same words that you did, a scapegoat?
I mean, because the bottom line is that
everyone does it. If they wanted to go on a witch hunt at WSU of inappropriate email usage,
everybody would be fired.
Stand by for thousands of firings.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, really. I mean, if they want to do it, let's do it upright and audit everyone's computer at WSU.
And what I said was, I would be really interested if we could, through even public information acts, which I believe are public record, get a hold of all their email records. And we would see, I would bet, that even these administrators who said he should get demoted have done exactly what he was being charged with.
And it's not even so much the policy, you know, states, it's not even so much the pornographic aspect, but the aspect of no personal usage of email.
Right, and that's...
I'd love to see that.
Right, and
things that are not strictly work related. How many administrators at WSU would fall into that category?
Precisely, and that's pretty much what he was being accused of, or that's pretty much what the charges are: is that he was using email and computer resources for non-work or scholarly related activities.
Right,
and like I said here, really, that would be almost equivalent to like a jaywalking offense.
Yeah.
It's not a very major offense.
No,
a lot of people do it.
Certainly not worth being fired over, that's for sure.
Right. And you know, and like one thing I gave Chief Hansen some props over was the fact that even though it's a really dumb rule, and I mean, we understand why we have it. You'd get some people that would just overly abuse the system, so you got to have some rule in there. And how do you draw a line in the sand? Say, well, you can do up to 3 emails per day that are personal in nature that don't take more than 15 minutes a time.
Right.
I mean, it's easier to have a policy that you turn a blind eye to and enforce every once in a while, but it can really screw somebody in the end.
Right.
And in this case, even though it's a horrible policy and everybody knows that people are breaking this left and right and not getting in trouble, not getting demoted, not losing $20,000 of pay a year,
yes,
or $15,000 or whatever it is.
Right.
He still took responsibility for his actions, said, yes, I did this. I shouldn't have done it. I am sorry for the embarrassment. I accept my punishment.
Right.
That's rare, very rare among people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to give him big props for that.
Yeah.
And one thing I sort of speculated in some ways, maybe this was a relief for him. Maybe it was like, you know, being the chief, it's such a political thing. It's not a law enforcement officer.
Certainly a lot of controversy has been swirling around that department lately, so you could almost understand why you wouldn't want to maybe be involved with that so closely. So,
yes. So I'm disappointed. I support the chief, and I support, I wanted him to know that I don't think that... I think that he's getting a raw deal and that I support him and that I don't think that he deserves to be demoted over this particular violation of policy.
Yeah, that's kind of been my, you know, perspective on it, you know, from day one, is that this is really, you know, again, if you want to start going on a witch hunt, break out plenty of wood, because there's going to be a lot of people to burn at the stake, because I guarantee you there's virtually no one that would be exempt from any kind of audit or something like that. At least one time in their career at WSU that they have not sent or received an email that was not strictly work-related.
Exactly.
So anyway, well, it's funny you were mentioning the waffle, because earlier I was receiving kind of a briefing from one of our high-ranked officials in the state legislature on education, and the WASL was a topic that came up. So that was it was rather interesting to hear some Republican perspectives on the WASL. The state Republicans have really, somehow there's this perception that the Republicans are responsible for the WASL. You know.
Yeah, well, anything that's bad
is a Republican. I don't know why there's that, you know, perception. You know, people rail against the WASL and how bad it is, and again, somehow that it's a Republican swamp. But yeah, people forget that the WASL, you know, was, you know, the whole history of the WASL, if you look back at it, you know, it was proposed by a Democratic governor and then refined by another governor, then implemented by another Democratic governor. You know, it's been all these Democratic administrations in Olympia that, you know, have foisted the you know, the WASL, you know, upon us in its current form, and kind of the Republican, you know, stance on the WASL is that, you know, as far as standardized tests go, the WASL is very expensive. You know, there are much cheaper tests that could be, you know, much cheaper standardized tests that could be administered other than the WASL. So as far as, you know, being cost effective, the WASL isn't. And then another thing that was, you know, I think is pretty convincing is that the problem, and you were touching on this, the problem with the WASL is, what good is the expense of all of the money that's put on this on the WASL if there's not going to be any accountability? In other words, they find out all these test scores, but they don't make any kind of effort to identify a particular school or a particular principal or a particular teacher that has maybe a lot of failing scores. You know, nothing is done to correct any. If they do discover any, you know, imperfections in the system, nothing is being done about it. You know, it's not like their teachers being removed or you know, fired or whatever, or counseled to do better because of, you know, of bad test scores. You know, typically, the only response when there are bad WASL scores is like, well, we need more money. You know, well, we don't have enough money, so we need to hire more teachers or what. You know, rather than like placing accountability. So, if we're not going to hold people accountable, then why even bother doing the testing? Really, that's what it all comes down to. And especially, no one's going to take it seriously because they keep postponing it. You know, you make it a requirement for graduation. Oh, but no one can pass it, so now we have to postpone it. And then, you know, this will just keep going on and on and on. And no one will ever be able to pass it as long as, like I said, no accountability is being, you know, being taken. So it was definitely kind of interesting to hear, you know, some of these perspectives. And I guess originally, there had been something that was called, I believe it was called the Master's Competency that was going to be this test that was given. And the idea was it wasn't, you know, the WASL has kind of mutated into this thing where it was going to be a graduation requirement, you know, mm-hmm. where it is now, or, you know, now, but of course they have to postpone it. But this master's competency was just going to be a standardized test that was similar to the WASL, but had nothing to do with actual graduation. What it was going to be is basically an asterisk type thing that would go on a diploma, you know, so that when colleges were looking at applicants, they could look on there and say, oh, okay, this person has this asterisk, so they performed academically better maybe than this other person who doesn't have it. You know, just would give, they would give, you know, universities and colleges more of a way to determine. What they could do is basically is to allow them to compare and contrast, say, like a student that graduated in Puyallup and a student that graduated in Pullman, even though the school systems are different, well, you know, they both have this asterisk on there, so we know that, you know, that they meet certain basic academic requirements. And that was, you know, that's kind of like what, you know, that was the idea. And like you said, now it's mutated into this thing through No Child Left Behind, and they've hitched their wagon to the WASL, and, yeah, now all the teachers are just concentrated on teaching towards the test,
right,
versus actual education. And I think most everyone agrees that's probably a bad thing. So
right. And then along with this, there was this article I just read, and there was a Seattle PI or Seattle Times. One of the columnists had wrote this column about how the Seattle School District is so race conscious.
Right.
And
right,
it's interesting,
yeah,
that, you know, they're in a county named after Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes.
That rather than judging people by the, not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character,
mm-hmm.
no, they're more worried about the color of their skin.
Right.
And there's a situation that the person who's in charge of diversity that the school district hired into this office that says, you know, their job is to look for anything that is that's racist or prejudiced or anything against these students within the curriculum, what the school does or whatever else. They have this person that's in there that actually has said that future time orientation is a racist concept and summer break is now a racist concept. I mean, it's you know, of course those are absurd, but these were actual examples written on the Seattle School District's website,
mm-hmm.
by this person that said, you know, future time orientation, in other words, thinking about the long term, thinking about graduation. If you're a first grader and you're thinking about graduating, you're racist.
Right.
Oh, when I'm going to graduate. Oh, you're thinking in the future, you racist little bugger. Oh, I can't wait till summer break. Oh, you racist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of it's silly. So anyway, just the concept that people are so race conscious over there when supposedly the one of the biggest people that people model themselves after wanted to see a colorblind society.
Right.
And what I'm arguing is with the WSU police chief job, I said two things are going to happen out of it. First off, we are going to see somebody from outside the university being hired.
Yes.
Somebody from a larger department who's probably like a number – anywhere from a number two to a number five ranking type person.
Sure.
And we're going to see it be a minority. The school is going to go out of its way to find somebody to appease all the people who are screaming racism left and right.
I would say you're probably right.
And to go along with that, the other thing that I'm thinking is that with this concept of crying racism about everything, about redefining racism to meaning only white people can be racist because only white people have power, and what I had said is, so no matter who, I mean, no matter how many people, no matter how many minorities you get in positions of power, they'll always argue that white people are in charge, therefore only whites can be racist.
Right.
But to go with that, you have this new concept that is really being trumpeted a whole bunch right now of white privilege. And I'm sure you're hearing that term more and more often.
Sure. Well, there's whole classes that are being taught on that. You know, you have to understand the concept of white privilege, not just white privilege, but white male privilege,
right?
In particular.
So we have this concept of white privilege that is becoming more and more predominant, and I think in a lot of ways it's going to sort of replace the old way was just you know, making the accusation that somebody's racist. And that was usually enough to make them go away and stop saying their racist things or whatever it is that wasn't liked. And now that is becoming so watered down because it's used way too much and in situations that aren't even really racist, such as summer break, such as future time orientation.
Right.
It's being used so liberally now that they have to find some other concept that's going to be a shock value.
Right.
And, you know, starting to claim that every single person who is white has white privilege and there's nothing you can do about it, you know, and this kind of, that kind of thing is just, that seems to be the, I think over the next 10 years, we're really going to see that harped on a lot. Like I said, there's actually a conference in Colorado coming up that is actually a white privilege conference. And it's not for white people to go there and talk about their privileges. It's actually a conference for people from all over the place to come to and learn about and try to, quote unquote, do something about white privilege. And it's like, oh, wow. That is a very broad, general concept. And like I said before, if you believe somebody's out to get you, you're going to find evidence to prove it.
Sure.
If you believe that somebody is a whatever, you're going to find evidence to fulfill that belief. And I believe that if you honestly believe that every single person who is white has white privilege, you are going to find evidence to that effect.
Sure.
So,
well, just one final thing I'd like to say, you know, to wrap things up, just based on, you know, the police have been much in the news lately for a variety of things. There's been a lot of stories about, WSU police, Pullman police, Moscow police, from everything, you know, you mentioned about, you know, Chief Hansen's troubles, the infamous taser incident that happened a couple months ago. Even up to how a lot of people were kind of laughing about the panty thief here in Pullman. That kind of became really an international story. It kind of went all over the world.
Yeah.
And but I think what really put things into focus is the murder of the student over in Moscow. And
yep.
I think, you know, for all the people that complain about the police departments around here and the allegations of racism and harassment and whatever the case might be, we all do well to remember, you know, what their real purpose is. And again, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I think we're all very fortunate to have, you know, police departments as professional as we do, and they are here for our protection. And, you know, there are bad things that can happen. Just, you know, even though we think we're very isolated, and we think the worst thing that can happen is someone like the panty thief, you know, that's not the case. You know, this murder pointed out. And so it is. I think it is good for people to maybe bear that in mind when they are critical of our local police departments and thank God that we do have them. So
truer words have not been spoken in the last 3 seconds, Tom.
Anyway, have a good week, and I'll talk to you next Monday.
All right, have a good one yourself.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Once again, the protector of Pullman, Batman himself, on the phone. So, sort of, if you missed the earlier parts of the show, we pretty much just had a recap of everything we've talked about over the last 2 hours. One thing I didn't talk about were we had that the fatal car accident out on the Albion Road last night. Brings the death total over the last 8 months to a really high number. And I don't know all the information about it or anything. I heard a little bit about it on the news this morning. And I don't know what information is actually correct and what is the, you know, it seems like anytime there's something major that happens, there's a lot of bad information that flies around at first. And, you know, it's usually a couple days before the real story truly gets out there. So I don't know if the news has exactly what's going on correctly right now, but it sounds like one car hit the other car, and unfortunately somebody died pretty quickly thereafter. And, you know, a couple other people were hurt at various levels. So I'm sure over time we'll get a better idea of exactly what happened and what the, you know, what the mechanisms of the injuries were, and maybe if any of it was preventable. And hopefully, if it was preventable, we can talk about it and learn what kind of things you can do to protect yourself, like we've talked about before. like wearing your seatbelts and you know, not driving under any kind of influences of any drugs or alcohol, and keeping yourself safe by traveling within the speed limit, and so on. So once we get more information, we hopefully will, you know, add that to our tally of things to think about as you are driving down the roadway. In the meantime, one other thing that has happened recently is intramural softball. And I have not talked about it for the last 3 weeks, even though it's been going on for 3 weeks. I guess I'll just say one thing to go along with it. Through the whole entire season, our team has been hitting the ball really well. Last night on our second game, we couldn't hit anything. We had a total of, between the 11 guys on the team, we had a total of 4 hits. But it was a double, a triple, a home run, and a single, which means as a team, together, we had 4 hits and we hit for the cycle. We lost. In the unfortunately. So the good news is that we're 4-2 on the season, going to the playoffs, and we'll be doing that here pretty soon. Coming up next will be Big Bad Ted. And we got Dave Barry with Blood on the Rafters. He was